today's episode of Still To Be Determined, we're going to talk about small-scale hydroelectricity production. Hey, everybody. As usual, I'm Sean Farrell here on Still To Be Determined to talk about Matt Farrell, my brother's most recent episode, which was about small-scale electric production using microhydro. Before we get into that, just a reminder of who we are. I'm Sean Farrell. I'm a writer. I write some sci-fi. I write some stuff for kids, including this I just received in the mail the other day. This is my advanced copy of my newest book.
Nice.
The Sinister Secrets of the Fabulous Nothings. If anybody is interested in supporting me, I believe that pre-orders may actually be available already for this. It is a great way to support an author. It really does help. It's ridiculous how much it helps. Advance orders ahead of pub. This will come out in June. If a bunch of you order the book now, it will actually, the industry looks at that as more sales than if you bought the book after it came out.
It's that really, makes no sense.
It has to do with like market research and what they think it means as far as how big it can scale and blah, 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 and how much they push it and blah, blah, blah. So it's like,
yeah,
please buy my book. The long and short of it is please buy my book. So that's who I am. I'm that guy who writes those books. And with me, as always, is my brother, who is That Matt of Undecided with Matt Farrell, which takes a look at emerging tech and its impact on our lives. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's been a good week. I was on vacation a while back, and now I feel like I'm back in the swing of things. So it's been a pretty good week. How about you?
It feels like spring is like a fingernail away, which I am very pleased about, because the New York Times actually had an article today in their weekend newsletter, which was like, spring's right here. It's around the corner. And for those of you who have been, through sheer force of will, having to struggle to get there, it can't come too soon. And I found myself nodding along like, yes, that is exactly where I am. I've been fine, big picture, but there's been this fingernail on the chalkboard in the back of my mind, which is, I just want it to be warmer. I don't want to wear this coat anymore. Why is everybody on the train so crowded? Like, I want us all to be able to have a little bit of room, a little bit of space, and breathe. So
yeah,
that's where I am. Before we talk about Matt's most recent episode, we always like to go back to the mailbag and see what you all have been leaving in the comments on our previous episodes. And from our previous episode 209, which was our discussion about heat pumps, that Matt did basically a review of the heat pump technology that he has in his home and talked about it as a technology across the board for homeowners. And we've had a number of conversations now, a number of episodes of this podcast where, for better or worse, we keep bringing up the Hindenburg.
Yeah. Here we go.
Which led to this, comment from Sage T Master, who wrote on the Hindenburg, "What a wild inside joke for our community to have. I will always think of that when the Hindenburg gets brought up now. And like Matt, every time it was mentioned in this video, I will have to stifle laughter." Yep. We are inadvertently creating a pocket community that anytime the disaster of the Hindenburg will be mentioned, we will stand in the background and go, tee-hee.
Oh, dear.
There was also this comment, which was more on topic regarding heat pumps. This is from JMD, and JM wrote in to say, "I live in Idaho and I have a Rheem 60 gallon heat pump installed in my garage. It works great. I only use it in heat pump mode. I don't use it on energy saver mode because I am off grid. Also, I do not turn it on during the night and it only runs during sunlight hours," which I think is an interesting aspect of this.
Yeah.
Your video, if I remember correctly, is largely like, here's how it would operate in your home, and here's how much you could expect to get out of it, and here's how much you'd expect to go into it.
Yeah.
And I don't recall you saying like, and there are options like turn it off over night, and like you really could cut your energy use of that dramatically. So you want to talk about that?
I alluded to that at the end of the video when I was going through the graphs of like, it's actually costing me slightly more to run this thing here in Massachusetts because electricity prices are so high. But I said, but I expect that to change over time as I continue to experiment with the settings. And that's exactly what I was getting at. Since I made that video, I've already been doing experiments like changing the settings every week and then looking at the data to see what's happening. And it's been driving my wife, Sue, nuts because the water's not quite as hot as it was. I don't like this. I like it hotter. It's like, okay, I'll put it back. And I change the setting again. She likes it set really hot. But I've been using the scheduling feature, which I just started last week, where it's like I've put it into heat pump only mode. I'm not doing the eco anymore. And then it's got like it will get to the proper temp by the morning time where we'd be taking a shower. And then later in the day, it goes back into this kind of lower temp, just kind of idle along. And I'm going to wait and see how that works. So I'm trying to dial this in and experiment over time to see how I can actually manipulate this to get the best energy efficiency and cost for myself based on how we use hot water in the house. It's just me and my wife. So it's like we take showers in the morning. That's really it. So it's like if she likes a hot shower, just make sure it's super hot in the morning. And the rest of the day, it could be a little lower. And doing dishes, you don't need scalding hot water burning your hands as you're doing dishes. So it's like, that's kind of what I alluded to. And that comment is spot on. It's like, I'm expecting to end up with something just like that, that basically overnight, it's basically doing nothing. And then it's just kind of like heating up during the day. I'm curious to see if that's actually going to save money and electricity or not.
I'm reminded as you talked about your wife's experience with like this water isn't hot enough when our water heater in this apartment needed to be replaced. And our landlord showed up one weekend and said, good news, I'm giving you a new water heater. The next day I went to take a shower and there was no hot water whatsoever. So I called the landlord and the landlord was like, that's weird. Let me go check. It turned out he had forgotten to turn it on. So he turned it on.
Step one.
He turned it on. And then the next time I went to take a shower or wash the dishes, I was constantly like, this feels like it's on some kind of energy saver mode because this water is barely warm. It's not really doing the heating that I would like. So I contacted him once again. Hey, is there something that can be done on this? Because it doesn't seem to be getting as hot as it used to. Oh, let me go check it. Oh, it turns out we have it in energy saver mode. Let me turn that off. So it turns off the energy saver mode. Now we have hot water. It still, though, is not hot. So it's like, you can tell you've got hot water, but you could basically turn the shower on to full hot and still be comfortable in it. I'm like, okay, this isn't hot enough. And doing dishes, things didn't feel like they were getting clean enough. Call him once again. Hey, is there any way the hot water could be turned up to the temperature it was previously? Okay, let me go check. You can now weld with the hot water that comes out of our spigots. If you were in an emergency situation where there was a fire and you used our hot water to try and fight the fire, you would feed the fire. It comes out as hot molten magma. And it is
steam coming out.
It is intensely hot. And washing dishes is an exercise in
You can mix cold water into it, Sean.
It is so hot that it is actually tricky with our faucet to get to dial it in to a comfortable level. I have just learned not to register the heat, so I'm fine. But yeah, that kind of experience. I am on Team Sue in this case. There was also this comment from Siebert who said, my heat pump switches between house heating and water heating so I can pull all the energy from outside. I live in a cold climate, Austria, and the heat pump can heat above 70 degrees Celsius, 158 Fahrenheit, with even COP 3 to 4. COP is an efficiency rating number. So my understanding is that the higher the number, the more efficient. So a COP of 3 or 4, 3 or 4 is probably on the lower end. Am I correct?
That's actually really good. It's coefficient of performance. If it was a COP of 1, that's one unit of energy in, one unit of energy out. So if it's a 3 or 4, that's 300 or 400% more efficient. And that's really good at that temperature range. That's excellent.
Siebert continues to say, with us as a family using up to 18 kilowatt hours of warm water per day, that is a lot of energy if I pulled it from the house instead of the outside. That is the energy consumed by my Tesla to drive 62 miles. Sure, on the electricity side, it is way less than the COP. But anyway, I would pump heat only in a series from one pump to the next if there is no other choice. So some positive heat pump experiences, not only from you, but from a lot of your viewers and listeners. There was also this.
Do you have another comment on the heat pumps?
I have one more comment, just a more general comment. So,
okay, because I was going to say on the heat pump note, I just visited a company here in Massachusetts that makes a cascading heat pump system that kind of blew my mind with how efficient it is and how wide a range temperatures it can handle and what it can do. I'm going to be making a video about it. So I would just say to people, stay tuned because there's more heat pump goodness coming.
Last, I wanted to share this comment from Mike Realty, who writes in to say, sadly, here in Central Connecticut, if you are on grid, you are not allowed to go off grid. So there is an aspect of all of these conversations that Matt and I are having regarding power usage, what you're allowed to do, what you can do. There are areas like Mike is living in where you just don't have a choice. And that then comes back to advocate for yourself, look into options and figure out how to begin the process. And we will talk about this again later in this very episode, because there's a similar comment I saw later for our follow-up conversation on Matt's most recent video, in which it does point to the need for people to advocate for themselves and try to get policies and regulations changed for their betterment. We'll talk about that in a bit. On now to Matt's most recent episode, The Genius of Small Hydro Turbines. This episode released on March 12th, 2024. And before we get into the meteor comments, let's talk about the puns. Yes, the puns. Hi-Fi Guy wrote in to say, as an old dad, I appreciate the puns.
Mm-hmm.
And Hi-Fi Guy, with a name like Hi-Fi Guy, you are an old dad. This from John P. And this was a moment in the video that I actually, when I was watching on YouTube, I marked it in the video and then I sent it to my partner with a comment, TLC, in Matt's most recent video. And after she watched it, her immediate response was, does Matt even know what he is saying? And I said, I'm pretty sure Matt is familiar with the work of TLC.
Yes.
But this was from John P., who dropped into the comments to say, at 3 minutes and 54 seconds, T-Boz, Left Eye, and Chili, TLC reference for the younger than 35 crowd. It was nice of him to drop in and drop that wisdom for everybody. And then there was finally this from, and I love this username, Customer Service 2902, who jumped into the comments to say, I literally spit my empanada out when you made that chasing waterfalls joke.
So I just got to say, for the puns in this one, it was, these videos are a team effort. It's not just me. I have researchers and writers that help me. I have science advisors. And this one was like a team effort like none other. This episode just cried out for, there were so many opportunities for just bad puns. So some of them were mine. Some of them were somebody from the science team. Some of them were the writer that helped pull it together. Like the Chasing Waterfalls, that's Vincent, the writer that worked on this one. Hats off to Vincent for the TLC reference. I was dying when he put that one in the script. I was just like, that's chef's kiss.
Your delivery, though, is masterful because you did it without missing a beat and it was just totally flat. So somebody sitting at home who is not familiar at all with Chasing Waterfalls is going to be like, the rivers and lakes they're used to. What a weird way to frame it. And everybody else is going to be going, empanada.
Yes. Yeah.
Onto the topic of the video itself, which is not about puns, but about water turbines. There was this from Linda Grace. So basically, anywhere there has been a water wheel driven mill historically, we could put in a small eco-friendly hydro. Sounds like a great idea to me. I do not believe that we will ever find a silver bullet that will solve all our energy needs with a single system. I think it is much more likely that we continue to expand our options, rooftop bladeless wind turbines, micro hydro, more efficient solar panels that are manufactured with fewer rare elements, etc. Linda, it's as if you've been watching Matt's videos and listening to this podcast for a while. These are the thing. This is the nail you keep hammering, Matt, which is stop looking for one tool to fit every job. Figure out what is needed, figure out what can meet that need, and then work to make it achieve the goal. It's not one size fits all.
I mean, this specific topic, the reason I went down this specific topic was whenever I've talked about like hydro or wind, people are always like, well, what about for homes? Like, what about wind turbines for homes? So I did videos about that. And people have been saying, well, what about hydro for homes? It'd be great if there was something out there. And I was like, well, there kind of is. Like, potentially, like, if you lived on a large river or a stream, your house is butted up against to it, maybe there's something that you could do. And so that's why we went down this topic. It's always interesting to see, like, all the different solutions that you can do that can tackle different aspects. So the no offense to all the people that leave these comments, but I'm going to call you out. The people that are like, just go nuclear, just go blank. It's like, please stop. Just stop. it's not just go nuclear. It's let's go nuclear. Let's go solar. Let's go all of the above, because we're going to need it all. And it can fit different needs depending on where you are.
In your video, you talk about the devastating environmental and human rights impact of the dam that was built in South America. And I think that the argument of just go blank fits within that as a good example. Just go blank can have such large scale ramifications. Just go nuclear. Going nuclear in the Amazon basin is not like, is that really the best case scenario there when you have technology being developed, which is having a far lower environmental impact and footprint that you can drop in where it's needed? Building a nuclear power plant in some place like Brazil puts into place all sorts of concerns around not only security, environmental impact, but is it in the right place to reach all the right people? It is an enormous environment. It is an enormous country. So to say, oh, we've got the silver bullet over here, it's not like putting in a single power plant near a city. You're talking about, these are, in some cases, massive geography with clusters of people throughout an environment where it would be difficult to have the scale of a new dam or solar panel farms or whatever it is, a nuclear power plant or any of these other older examples. It's just not that simple. And on top of that, I imagine, and you can talk about this, what is the cost efficiency behind these smaller scale designs versus the large scale?
Oh man, Sean, that's a can of worms. That's okay. To tease that apart, at a high level, it's hard to say one's better than the other. Depends on the situation. But like, if you're talking about smaller, like disparate pockets of smaller cities or pockets of towns and stuff like that, doing more of a micro grid approach is probably going to be it's going to be faster and it's probably going to be cheaper. If you're talking about large metropolitan areas, then large scale production is probably going to end up being more power for the dollar. I guess this is the way you would say it. So it really is like that way we just talked about, the right tool for the right job. So like, if you're trying to power New York City, you're not going to put tens of thousands of these little micro hydro things all over the place, over the Hudson River. You're going to try to build one thing that can kind of power everybody. So a nuclear power plant outside of a New York City area makes a hell of a lot more sense than a thousand little micro hydro turbines.
Right.
But for a place where you're talking about, like, this town has a few thousand people and then this city is like, 50,000 people and they're kind of separate. It's like you could build out smaller little pockets of these micro grids that can satisfy the needs for that little area. And then if there's overages, they can share between each other. So it's like, that kind of approach could be more faster and cheaper to do. So it really depends on the situation, which one's more cost effective.
I would also say that there are certain specific environments where, even in a large scale city like New York or any major metropolitan area, having a small scale micro grid as backup for emergency situations at hospitals, airports, those could be critical given a moment where the power goes down because of some massive critical failure and you have the ability for a hospital to still operate semi-normally because of maybe a few turbines that are, you mentioned, like, you're not going to put turbines everywhere in the Hudson River, But if there's a hospital that's right next to the river, maybe a couple of turbines in the river are a good option. So,
yep, exactly.
Again, find the right tool for the right job. There was also this comment from Going to Heck. The first genius one with the ball, she's referring, of course, to the mini hydro design, which was the pendulum swinging along the center so that it looks like the never-ending toilet flush in which the ball just will not go down.
Yeah.
Going to Heck says, it looks like an incredible fish squisher. So I know that environmental yes. impact, and that would include life impact on organisms in these environments. You talk about that in your video, and I'm curious, is the one with the swirling pendulum one that would fall into the category? From my mind, I thought fish would just kind of like swirl around that and go down the hole. Even if that pendulum does kind of hit them, it's probably not going to like crush them. But
it's not a mortar and pestle in there.
It's not like anchovy paste. It's just like coming out the other end with just like people with baskets of pasta waiting for it to land in it.
So here's the thing about that. I brought it up in the video, but my friend Ryan, who runs the channel Zeroth, he's an engineer getting his PhD. He did a deep dive on that exact technology. In the video, he kind of alluded to the fact that this would be better for fish. But in our research digging into it, there is no evidence of that. In fact, in the company's own marketing materials and spec sheets and patents and stuff, we found almost the exact opposite, where they basically said there's been no studies into that this is safer or worse or anything for fish. And what they recommend in these systems is that you're putting like, not netting, but you're putting up like, metal grids and screens to filter like things out.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Because you don't want to damage the machine. And two, you want to keep those things from getting in there in the first place, which would be good for fish. So they were talking about that you'd want to be doing that with this kind of a system, no matter what. So I would say there needs to be studies to really officially say it's better or worse. But it seems to me designs, like a small fish would just go whoop right through it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it'd be crushed.
It also seemed like there's the size of the fish and then there's the number of fish. And it seemed like the way some of these design work is to you take a river and you divert a portion of the water so that it moves off at a similar slant to that spot. And then at a point where the river is now lower, you reintroduce that water at that later point. So the place to put your barricade to filter out the fish would be at that diversion point, not near the machine. You wouldn't want there to be any fish effectively by that point. And I can't help but wonder if it's just human instinct to look at something that is a big rolling ball and say, well, that's got to be safer than a bunch of rotating blades, right? Is it just us with a knee-jerk response of like, I wouldn't put my hand in a fan, but I'd reach in to grab a basketball and a hoop. That's no big deal.
Yeah.
Caitlin jumped in to say, my dad lives near a similar diversion-based small hydro. He says that you wouldn't even know it was there unless you went off the footpath looking for the awning. Apparently, it's amazingly quiet. I thought that was a really neat aspect of this as well. Living near a dam or, people complain about wind turbines making noise. Mm-hmm. The idea that something as calm as a bubbling brook or a river in the background might not feel all that different from the way it does naturally is a bonus, I think, to this technology.
It's a huge bonus. Yeah, definitely.
Finally, there's this, which goes back to the comment I made earlier about if you want to see change in the world, figure out how to be the change and advocate for yourself and figure out who to contact regarding policies and regulations that have a negative impact on your life and your choices. This comment from the Kanja Cat, who wrote in to say, I remember reading an article about a small town in the eastern U.S. that wanted to convert a tail race from an old mill into a small hydroelectric generator capable of supplying all the electricity needs of the town. The infrastructure was all mostly in place, and the dam had been there about a century, so it should have been an easy job. Enter the government. It took them about a decade to get through all the red tape, injunctions, and studies to basically drop a turbine into an already existing structure. The biggest obstacle of doing anything decentralized is usually the centralized power resisting it. This is, I think, a good case of we talk from a US context. I think that the unspoken in most of our conversations is Matt and I, without meaning to, infusing a lot of US-centric thinking into how to make change. But this is something that across the board, globally, it is difficult under the best of circumstances to get people with power to listen to you so that you can make the choices you want to. But that doesn't mean that if you have the opportunity, you shouldn't try. And this is the kind of 21st century opportunity to redirect some old 20th or even 19th century structures that may be in place and holding back your options. There are going to be forces at work against changes like this. Centralized utilities, centralized governments, the idea that a new technology that may have answers will destabilize the old guard is going to meet resistance. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. So I encourage people to not only figure out how to advocate for themselves around topics like this that they think will have a positive impact on their lives. If you're having that kind of experience, let us know in the comments. We would love to hear from you. And I think it would be an interesting topic for Matt and his team to follow up on in looking at what are some of the policy obstacles that stand in the way, not just the technological obstacles. So we look forward to seeing your comments. Don't forget.
Hold on, go ahead. Before you jump off. There is one thing I do need to bring up. In this video, there was a mistake that a lot of people pointed out within hours of this video going live. I just have to apologize for. There was a section where we were talking about the Itaipu Dam and the amount of pressure, and we were trying to make it relatable to like wrap your head around. And so it's the same amount of pressure as, you know, this. And it would be like 500,000 or 500 million times more powerful than the average US faucet. Well, our math on that was correct in our script work, because my science advisor crunched those numbers for us. His calculations, perfect. Nothing wrong with his calculations. Where the things broke down was when we took that calculation and we wrote it into the script, we didn't just like copy and paste the calculation number. We translated it into like words. So it was, it's 500,000 times more power and pressure. It was actually 500,000,000. And so we switched billion into million in the words. And then when we were proofreading all the stuff, we just completely slipped over just double checking to make sure that word matched the actual calculation, and it got through. And so it was in the video, and I was like, facepalm, like the stupidest thing that should have been cut. And so it's like, I just wanted to apologize for that. We put a correction in the video. So a little card slides out and says, there's a correction. And you click it and it tells it what it actually is. But I just want to apologize for that. That should have been caught, but wasn't. Buck stops with me.
Well, I don't know if I speak for all of your listeners, Matt, but I don't think I will ever be able to forgive you.
Yeah, I know.
So as always, I invite people to jump into the comments. Let us know what you think. You can also subscribe, leave a review, and don't forget to tell your friends. Those are three easy and free ways for you to support our channel. And if you'd like to more directly support us, you can click the join button on YouTube, or you can go to stilltbd.fm and click the become a supporter button. It allows you to throw some coins at our heads. We appreciate the welts, and then we get down to the business of talking about TLC. Thank you everybody for taking time to visit with us today, and we look forward to talking to you next time.